Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Sorry, I didn't wait till you sorted that out. I thought the Bhagavatam might be more important than the temporary arrangements of the table in the room. Hare Krishna, good morning to everyone. Today we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 2nd Canto, Chapter 9, text number 34. This is a very important verse. It's one of the four nutshell verses of Srimad Bhagavatam, Chatur Shloki. So I thought that because we have only one verse assigned today, and the purport is rather long, but it's important, that we would go through it bit by bit. So we'll chant the Sanskrit and then read through the purport. I'll make some comments as we go along to break it up so that we can get the Prabhupada's meaning of this very important verse. Does everybody know what I mean when I say the nutshell verses of Srimad Bhagavatam?
No clue.
You know the statement in a nutshell, right? You know the statement in a nutshell, something in a nutshell, some subject matter explained very concisely. It can fit inside like a walnut shell like that. It's all the elements so that you can see the whole thing. I remember my kids were growing up, they had this toy called Polly Puck. It was a Polly Pocket. It was a girl's toy. You could open it up and it had a whole little world in a little thing like this. So the Bhagavatam in a nutshell means these four verses. There are four verses of this, which this text 34 today is the second verse, contain the essence of all the philosophy that's taught in Srimad Bhagavatam. So they're very, very important, and the meaning is something that Prabhupada brings out very nicely in the purport. And the subject matter, particularly of this text today, is reality versus illusion, or knowledge versus ignorance. You know this statement, this proverb that where ignorance is bliss, it is folly to be wise. Have you heard that before? Where ignorance is bliss, it is folly to be wise. Anybody know where that comes from? If Clayton was here, I think. Yes, it's Thomas Gray. English poet Thomas Gray, 1742. This is part of a poem he wrote that said, that's Ode to a Distant Prospect of Eton College. Ode to a Distant Prospect of Eton College. And it's interesting. There's a story connected with this statement, and we'll get around to the reason why I'm telling you this before we read the Bhagavatam. There's a story connected with trying to understand the meaning of this verse. Tis folly to be wise, where ignorance is bliss. Apparently, a man approached Socrates at one point in time, and he said he wanted knowledge. And so Socrates took him to the ocean. And what he did was he took the man by the hair, and he dunked his head in the water, and he held his head under the water until the man was struggling to breathe. He was frantic. You can imagine your head being held underwater like that. So finally he let him up. And he told him that when you want knowledge as much as you want it to breathe, then you'll get knowledge. So where ignorance is bliss, where we don't have any reason or any understanding or any desire why we should have knowledge, then it's foolish to be wise, 'tis folly to be wise. So this verse today gives us a reason. Now, it's a lot of philosophy, and I want to try to make it something that you can relate to a little more. So I have one more example before we get into chanting the verse and reading the purport. And that's a story from a college campus that I read in the newspaper last week. Apparently, up at Penn State University in Pennsylvania, maybe some of you know, there were some student riots up there earlier this year, maybe December last year or January this year. There were some student riots up there. And different students took part. So there was a story that came out about one student. He was a very, you know, dedicated guy. He was in the ROTC, which was the military program, training to become an officer in the Army. Indeed, that was his father was an officer in the Army, and his whole function and outlook on life was to become an officer in the Army. And so therefore, he was taking this ROTC training, Reserve Officer Training Corps. Kind of a straight kind of person. But somehow or another, due to bad association, he found himself in this crowd that was part of these student riots. And some group of people were advocating that they throw over a news van. And he happened to be standing nearby, and as the crowd pushed forward, by association with that crowd, he was also pushed forward. And his hand touched the van just before they flipped it. And all this was caught on videotape. And so he was arrested. And he spent some of his summer in jail. And he was drummed out of the ROTC program. Denied that opportunity, and his whole life sort of disappeared before him. Within a matter of seconds, this all happened. So, because his association was, let's say, ignorance, his whole plan of life was destroyed within a matter of seconds. That's the power of ignorance. Of course, as we'll read in the verse today, that's all subsidiary. The power of ignorance is subsidiary to the power of knowledge. But we have a choice to make, all of us. So although this is philosophy that we're going to be going through today, it's something that you should try to understand and apply to your lives in a very real way, because if we choose illusion, even for a few seconds, it can have a very powerful impact on our lives, in ways in which that we might not expect. So, with that preface in mind, we'll chant today's verse and then go through the purport with comments by me and hopefully some questions by you, or comments by you also. So the word for word meanings, rite without, artam value, yet that which, pratiyate, appears to be, na not, pratiyate, appears to be, cha and, atmani, in relation to me, tat that, vidyat, you must know, atmana, my, maya, mayam, illusory energy, yata, just as, abhasa, the reflection, yata, as, tama, darkness. Vrite vritam yat pratiyate prat pratiyeta na pratiyeta chatmani tadvidyad atmano mayam yata baso yata tama vrite vritam yat pratiyate. Na Na pratiyata chatmani. Tadvidyat atmano mayam. Yata baso yata tama. Chant, please. Okay, thank you. So, translation, O Brahma, whatever appears to be of any value, if it is without relation to me, has no reality. Know it as my illusory energy, that reflection which appears to be in darkness. So here, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, is instructing Lord Brahma. Lord Brahma is the original being of this universe, and he creates this universe and all that we see around us. And as he began his task, he was naturally not confused, not afraid, but in awe of the task in front of him. And so therefore, he needed some encouragement in that. And so he approached the Supreme Lord, and the Supreme Lord began to explain to him different key concepts or ideas that would help him in his task of creating the universe. And so that's where these four nutshell verses that we spoke about before come from. And so in this verse, particularly the subject matter is reality and illusion. And to give you some idea how these things are nutshell verses, the second verse, the very second verse of Srimad Bhagavatam in the first canto talks about the same thing. It says there that the knowledge given in this book is the highest truth, and it is reality distinguished from illusion. And not just for philosophical sense, but for, it says here, for the welfare of all. And such truth uproots the threefold miseries. Threefold misery is referring to difficulties we find in this world in so many ways. And so the miseries which we experience by being an illusion are uprooted by knowledge. And so how that takes place, how knowledge is better than illusion, is the subject matter of the verse here today. Okay, is everybody sort of orientated in a way to understand where we're going with all this? Any questions on any of that? Okay. All right, well, I'll start reading the purport and make different points as we go through, but maybe others can help as well. So, Srila Prabhupada's purport. In the previous verse, it had already been concluded that in any stage of the cosmic manifestation, its appearance, sustenance, its growth, its interaction of different energies, its deterioration, and its disappearance, all has its basic relation with the existence of the personality of Godhead. And as such, whenever there is forgetfulness of this prime relationship with the Lord, and whenever things are accepted as real without being related to the Lord, that conception is called a product of the illusory energy, because nothing can exist without the Lord. It should be known that the illusory energy is also an energy of the Lord. The right conclusion of dovetailing everything in relationship with the Lord is called Yoga Maya, or the energy of union, and the wrong conception of detaching a thing from its relationship with the Lord is called the Lord's Daivi Maya, or Mahamaya. Both the Mayas also have connection with the Lord, because nothing can exist without being related to Him. As such, the wrong conception of detaching relationships from the Lord is not false, but illusory. So, the absolute truth is what's being described. And absolute truth means that, I think last week, Shyamala, it's like you were asking what absolute truth means or something like that. I think you were asking that point, something to that, along that line. Well, absolute truth means that everything is in relationship to that truth. It's not that something has an existence which is not in relation with the truth. And so the Supreme Personality of Godhead, everything is in relation to Him. But we perceive things a little differently, don't we? Sometimes we don't necessarily make the connection, how something is connected with God. Well, that state of mind or that thought that something is not connected with God is being described here as illusion. So even the illusion is connected with God. Nothing is independent of God or the absolute truth. So that's the first point that we need to understand about this verse, about the absolute truth. That even though things seem separate from God, they are not separate, but that's actually the action of His illusory energy. So is point number one clear? Everyone's okay with that? Because it builds. Argument builds.
Go ahead. Just scoring that people are always asking why negative things happen under God's jurisdiction. That's also part of His energies. Mm. So there's negative things in the illusory energy only?
You're asking, are negative things only in the illusory energy only? Well, the negativity in relationships and actions of in our actions in this world all stem from misidentification of the body as the self. Now we're going to talk about that, and the purport goes through that, so we'll get to that point. But because of this basic concept of misidentifying ourself as a product of this material world, therefore we suffer miseries. And therefore the first verse of the Bhagavatam says that knowledge uproots the miseries. And we all have experience of this. By getting a little perspective on a situation, we suffer less in that situation. If we identify with our car, the example is given, we identify with our car so much that we we become one with our car. If a car, we get in an accident, we immediately say, somebody hit me, right? You hit me, because we're identifying so much with the car. But if we have a little perspective, well, okay, it's not me, then my car is damaged, but I'm not damaged, and we suffer less. So knowledge, you can see this is an example of how knowledge makes us suffer less. and knowledge comes from this kind of illusion. But again, the point is that illusion also has its origin in the Supreme Lord. It's not separate from the Supreme Lord. Okay? Yes. Well, you have to have complete knowledge, and there's different stages of knowledge. We may have knowledge, very rudimentary knowledge that we're not this material body. But if we ultimately don't know, well, what are we then? Then we're still going to be subject to some kind of illusion or misery in some way or another. So we have to have complete knowledge, and again, that's what the Bhagavatam gives. Complete knowledge, A to Z, of our relationship with the Supreme Lord. So, and that starts with the very next paragraph here. And so maybe someone can read it for me. Shruti Sagar, you want to start reading the second paragraph, starting misconceiving?
Misconceiving one thing for another is called illusion. For example, accepting a rope as a snake is illusion. But the rope is not false. The rope, as it exists in the front of the illusion person, is not at all false, but the acceptance is illusory. Therefore, the wrong conception of accepting this material manifestation as being divorced from the energy of the Lord is illusion, but it is not false. And this illusory conception is called the reflection of the reality in the darkness of ignorance. Anything that appears as apparently not being produced out of my energy is called Maya. The conception that the living entity is formless, or that the Supreme Lord is formless, is also called illusion.
In the Bhagavad Gita 2.12, it was said by the Lord in the midst of the battlefield that the warriors standing in front of Arjuna himself, and even the Lord, had all existed before. They were existing on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, and they would all continue to be individual personalities in the future also. Even after the annihilation of the present body, and even after being liberated from the bondage of material existence, in all circumstances, the Lord and the living entities are individual personalities, and the personal features of both the Lord and living beings are never abolished.
I just want to stop there. Thank you. This is, a very important point to understand when we're distinguishing illusion from reality. The reality is that we will always be, we always have been, and we always will be individual persons. We never lose our individuality. Of course, unless when we accept the illusion that I'm not an individual person. And I think this is a very encouraging bit of knowledge for all of us, that we're always going to maintain our personality, that we're an individual. And we, as an individual, we have a relationship, a personal relationship with the Supreme Lord. When people approach death, I think one of the main things that they fear is this idea that this concept of me as an individual is somehow or another going to disappear. Because they have no knowledge of what takes place on the other side of death, they think that, well, there on the other side, I'm going to lose my individuality, I'm going to lose my person, I'm going to lose all the relationships that I have. But it's being told here, right at the beginning of this purport, that that's something you never have to worry about. We will always be persons and conscious of our relationships with other persons, and particularly the Supreme Person, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. So to think otherwise is illusion, and that illusion causes some fear. I mean, who here wants to just be a non-entity? I mean, it's not a very attractive proposal. It may even be a fearful proposal for us that we lose our personhood. So that's the first illusion that's being dispelled by this purport. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Mm-hmm. How do we understand that the Supreme Lord has a relationship with all living entities, like in Vrindavan with all the cowherd boys, the cows and the gopis and the parents and everything, yet he says that he's all renunciation? Well, Krishna has many qualities, 64 of which are listed in the Nectar of Devotion, which Srila Prabhupada has given to us. And I recently read how two of them are related. The first being Atmarama, or self-satisfied. And I mentioned that one because it's kind of related to what you're saying about all renunciation, because if someone's completely satisfied, then they need nothing, so they can renounce everything. So that's one quality of Krishna. He's Atmarama. So that means he has no need for anything, and so therefore he can renounce anything. But he has another quality as well, and that quality is that he's grateful. He's grateful for any little thing that anyone does for him at any time throughout eternity. He is so grateful for that. So even though he can renounce everything easily because he's Atmarama, still he interacts with his devotees in a very loving way because he's very grateful for whatever little service that they have. So his ability to be renounced or self-satisfied in no way negates the desire for reciprocating with his devotees in loving ways. And indeed, one devotee was telling me yesterday that Krishna has a different quality that he shares with uniquely with every living being. We try to understand that. If the Supreme Lord is absolute and everything is in relation to him, which this verse says, and he's unlimited and so full of potencies and qualities, unlimited qualities, that he has enough to relate with each of us uniquely on an individual basis. That's the type of individuality you don't have to fear losing, as confirmed in this by Prabhupada's statements here. Let's go here, yeah. Can we get the mic going around? Do they have one over there? Okay, no problem.
We have our gross body and our subtle body that we understand right now as who we are materially, so to speak. But you're talking about that we don't lose our individuality. So I was wondering what are we, so to speak? I mean, how we relate to ourselves right now is our gross and subtle body, which are both material. So it seems like if that is gone, then who are we and what is our individuality?
Okay. Yeah, well, this gross body and subtle body are products of illusion, right? The products of this material energy. So as defined in this verse, they're not false, but they are illusory, and we're identifying with them. So therefore, we're living in an illusory life right now. What we are in reality, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, Gopi Bharta Padda Kamala Yor Dasa 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 Anudas. We are the servant of the servant of the servant of the servant of the servants of Lord Krishna. And so what that means for each of us individuality in terms of our eternal relationship with Krishna is something that has to be revived. At this stage, we know it's a personal, individual relationship. How that manifests, what my individual relationship with Krishna is something that will be revealed to us as we become more and more conscious of ourselves as individuals and the Supreme Lord as an individual. I just gave you the example about how Krishna is so unlimited that he can relate with every living being in an individual way. Now, if we really try to think about that, where does that take our mind? Because we can't conceive of a person like that, can we? So we kind of like go off and start thinking in some kind of impersonal way about how God could be. Because we never have any experience with a person that is so unlimited and so giving and so wonderful. And so that's because our consciousness is not fully developed. Our consciousness, and we take the Krishna consciousness, is described like a bud, like a flower bud, that it grows, and the bud opens up, and then it becomes fully blossomed. So our consciousness is not fully blossomed yet. The process of Krishna consciousness is one by which we endeavor to have our consciousness blossom. And when it fully blossoms, then we'll understand who we are specifically in terms of what kind of body we have, what kind of relationship we have with Krishna. That will be there. And that's the process of our developing consciousness. But at least initially, we have to distinguish ourselves as being eternal persons rather than products of this illusory energy of the Lord. I think Baba Saint Prabhu has a question. Yeah, you want to give him the mic?
Is our relationship with Krishna already there? In other words, is everyone already a cowherd boy or a gopi or a blade of grass or a cow? Or does one aspire to attain a certain rasa and then that rasa is given to you? Or do we, you know, are we all constitutionally have a relationship already and that just simply needs to be uncovered? Or are we trying to develop into a relationship?
Okay. Thank you. These are questions that are going much deeper than the second canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. These are subject matters for the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. But I can say that Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema Sadva Kani Noi Shavana Shuti Chitti Chetiti Udoi. Something like that. That love of God is dormant in the heart of all living beings. So in answer to the first part of Baba Sain's question, yes. We do have a relationship with Krishna already established. It's in our heart, as I said, in this bud kind of form. Now, when that blossoms, whether it in that sort of a bud-like state, the relationship, whatever it is not manifest. So I think that the question should be, to change the game that he put forward to us here, the question should be not whether that relationship is specific in our heart right now, but how that relationship blossoms. And that how it will blossom is by following the teachings of our parampara, of our gurus, and following in the mood that they execute devotional service in. We're given this term Rupanugas, the followers of Rupa Goswami. And so Rupa Goswami, if we study his books, he teaches a certain path of perfection, how to attain perfection, and how to aspire for perfection. So our duty as followers of Rupa Goswami is to follow in that mood that's given to us how we practice Krishna consciousness. And then our relationship will develop following those great devotees of the Lord. So I think that for our level and understanding, and particularly for this class today, I think that would be my response to Baba Basin. And we are, this subject matter is reality. This is reality. Now, there's a lot of illusion we could talk about, how the cars are Maya and stuff like that, but you know, this is actually knowledge we're talking about.
The second verse in Srimad Bhagavatam, reality distinguished from illusion for the welfare of all. And also the theme that knowledge is taking us out of ignorance, and it's, you know, we're suffering due to our ignorance. But at the same side, we're so forgetful. We have the tendency to forget. I don't even remember most of last month, you know, in detail what I did. So if it's to my benefit to have this knowledge and to remember this knowledge, but yet at the same time I have the tendency to forget. I mean, I remember last month, but to speak of my last life or millions of lives ago, that I don't remember any one of them. If there were millions of them, I don't even remember just one of them. So how am I to feel encouraged that there's going to be something that I'm going to take of value and it's going to stick?
Okay, that's a good question. It's a good question, and it does lead me back to my outline here, so thank you. What is the nature of illusion? That's what we want to discuss. What is the actual nature of illusion? Well, one thing is as pointed out by Jai Nitai Gauranga Prabhu, is that it's very powerful. Illusion is very powerful, and we as the living entity are what? Very, very small. The illusory energy of the Lord is Mahamaya, or great. Maha means great. Great illusion. It's very powerful. And we are very small. Therefore, we can easily become overcome by Maya. And the influence of Maya or illusion is that we forget. We forget last week. We forget 2 minutes ago. We certainly forget our previous lives. That is the illusory power of the Lord. And that's why we have this feeling not only of forgetfulness, but of seeing ourselves disconnected from God. I mean, how many people, if you walk to them on the street and you ask them, do you feel your connection with God? I mean, how many people are going to say yes, truthfully answer that question, yes, that they feel their connection with God? Not very many, because of the illusory energy of the Lord. It makes us think that we are separate from the Lord. And as described here in the purport, and we might as well start jumping because we're not going to cover it all. Here in the purport it says here, the illusory energy has two phases of existence, namely the covering influence and the throwing influence. By the throwing influence, the illusory energy throws living entities into the darkness of ignorance, and by the covering influence, she covers the eyes of men with a poor fund of knowledge about the existence of the Supreme Person who enlightens the Supreme Individual Living Being, who enlightened the Supreme Individual Living Being, Brahma. So this is the power, a throwing one. That means that we're placed in ignorance and overcome with, we're faced with a situation we cannot overcome. That's the power. Although the spiritual energy is superior to the material energy or the illusory energy, because we're such a small spark of the spiritual energy, we can become overcome. And what's the example that's generally given about the living entity? Right. Right, that spark, when it comes out of the fire, it can go three places. It can go on dry grass, where it ignites and, you know, develops. It can go on water, where it's extinguished. Where's the other place it can go? One other place it can go also. On the ground, huh? And sort of, yeah, it fizzles out. Okay, the ground, it fizzles out. So when this infinitesimal spirit soul can be overcome by this great great power of illusion. Another example is the seashore. Sometimes it's covered by the water, sometimes it's not covered by the water. So that's the position of the living entity, being so small. So we're thrown into ignorance, and we can't do anything about it. We can't do anything about it unless we're rescued. And so knowledge comes to us, we're rescued from that illusion by great spiritual personalities who come to this world and they give knowledge. We were talking with Tulsi Rani last night and she was explaining how she becomes so happy when she's giving knowledge to people, spreading Krishna consciousness, giving knowledge. This is actually giving people a chance to come out of the ignorance. Otherwise, you can't come out on your own. That's the power. of ignorance. So that's the throwing potency. And the covering potency is that we have this poor fund of knowledge. We have no idea who we are, and therefore we suffer. Okay, does that answer your question? Any other questions?
It's not unfair on the part of the Lord to make us forgetful, because we would have had a lot of miseries in the past lives also. But we, in this life, I don't remember when I died in the last life. So what happens is that I'll not care for it. I mean, if I don't know the miseries, why should I care? I mean, then it's unfair on part of the Lord then.
Right. Well, that's, you've described very nicely this covering potency. You know, we're thrown in. He said, isn't it unfair of the Lord that he makes us forgetful of our relationship with him and throws us into this material world? Essentially, is that it?
Similar to what I was saying is that due to this avaran, this covering potency, we also, first of all, we forget the relation, and then we also forget all the miseries which we have been through in the past lives. So it's like, I mean, in like the state laws, if you get jailed, you'll know that there is misery in committing something, so you'll not commit it. But in this case, you have done something in a previous life, maybe you have had suffering also, and you've forgotten about it in this life. And the suffering in this life also, you'll forget in the next life. So this punishment or this suffering which we get is not carried forward in the... that's slightly unfair.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that the suffering is carried forward. What may not be carried forward is why we're suffering. In other words, people can understand that that they're suffering. And they can even understand that they may be suffering for something they did in the past. That they may not be able to go beyond this life, but they may be able to understand, well, I committed a crime when I was 14 years old and I had to go to jail, and that affects me for the rest of my life. They understand I'm suffering from what I did in the past. But the mechanism of why they're suffering or how they're being dealt the suffering is something that there's no knowledge of until you get scriptural knowledge. So there is knowledge. Knowledge is available. It's available in the form of scriptures and in spiritual teachings. But part of the covering potency is we have no inclination for that. So when we start, so therefore the devotees of the Lord, they come and they don't necessarily wait for inclination. For instance, if you're doing the Krishna Lunch here. So Krishna Lunch is a program that gives people spiritual, gives them prasadam, spiritual food, which helps them to revive their eternal consciousness. Now, if we had gone to the university and asked them, look, you know, we want to try to help people revive their spiritual consciousness, and therefore we're out here and we want you to give us permission so we can do it. They wouldn't do it. They wouldn't do that. So people aren't going to ask to have their consciousness revived. It's the job and the duty of the devotees of the Lord to go and give it to them. And it has to be palatable, so they take it, obviously. But to give them knowledge. Knowledge is available. It's there in the scriptures. Why we're suffering, exactly how we're suffering, how we can end that suffering, that's all available. But people don't want it. And that's the unfortunate thing. But despite people not wanting it, the Lord comes in different avatars. It's not just us that are like out there trying to beat people over the head. But the Lord himself comes in avatar time and time and time again to give this knowledge to society so that people can awaken their consciousness. But most people don't want to, and therefore it's actually the Lord's kindness that he lets us forget that if I commit this act, I'm going to suffer so terribly. We want it. We want it. We're demanding it. If you're a parent and you have a child, to a certain degree, if that child wants to do something, Prabhupada gives the example of himself about a man, his son wanted to touch fire. He kept telling him, no, don't touch fire. It's going to be bad. Don't touch fire. It's going to be bad. But one time, he let him touch the fire. Why did he let him touch? He wanted his son to suffer? He knew he was going to suffer. He wanted his son to know. He let him do it so he'll learn. So he'll know, oh, I know now if I touch the fire, that's something I shouldn't do because I'll be burned. And so the Lord is like that with the living entity. You know, he tries to warn you, don't do this. But ultimately, if you want to do it, then he says, okay, you can do it. But try to learn a lesson at least. Unfortunately, we don't try to learn a lesson. We just want to do it. And we get so used to doing that that that's all we do. And so that is that facility is this material world, and it's also given to us by the Supreme Lord. Let's see, some other people had some. Right.
So once we choose to turn our back on Krishna, then, I mean, Krishna is behind everything, but he allows us to go on ahead and do what we want to do. He's not going to make us love him. And then once we do that, it's really the modes of material nature take over, and whatever we're taking shelter of, those are the reactions that are coming to us. It's not like God is punishing us.
Right.
It's
this,
our own desires are being fulfilled through the modes of material nature.
Right. And this is the essence of the teachings of this verse is that everything is connected with the Supreme Lord. There's nothing that's not connected with him. So our ability to forget him is also his mercy to us. It's also connected to him. It's not like it can be disconnected. The effect is that we feel disconnected. That's the wonderful nature of the Lord's energy, is that even though you're connected, he can make you feel like you're not by the power of illusion. But as we read in that, started that one purport, misconceiving one thing for another is called illusion. So that is illusion, that we're not connected with the Supreme Lord. And that's what we have to try to overcome. Yeah, let's see if anybody else has anything. Yes. Well, let's go over here. Go ahead. Yes. No.
My question's slightly, it's not related to this particular topic, but it's a question I've often had is we, in our interactions with devotees, we become attached to specific group of devotees especially. Like there's certain devotees that really inspire us and that we really like the company of. And I was wondering, like ever since I was little, I used to worry about the fact that those relationships would end, you know, and can you just talk on that point a little bit? Because I always wanted to find consolation, like, oh, those particular devotees are not there by chance. Those are the ones that we're going to be with in the spiritual world, or some kind of comfort, you know, because I guess, you know, like all the people that inspire me, I want to be with them forever. I don't want it to just end this life.
Well, that's nice, and I think that is a desire that sort of transcends the body. I can just repeat some things that come to mind Prabhupada said about that. One thing he said is that we'll have an ISKCON in the spiritual world, which kind of means that, you know, those people that are involved in ISKCON will be together there as well. Actually, I had a dream one time where I was Prabhupada's servant, and one of the things that was happening in the dream is like one after another, Prabhupada's disciples were coming back into his. This was in a spiritual world. I was there, Prabhupada, in the spiritual world, and one by one they would come. Oh, I remember particularly, I was telling Prabhupada, oh, Brahmananda has come, you know, and so one after another, all these devotees were coming back. So that relationship is eternal in that way, and I think that we can think that because there are. Even if you read the Rasika literatures and everything, they describe that followers of, like I was hearing this morning about Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Bhaktivinoda Thakur is such and such Manjari who's a follower of Lalita Sakhi. And so, and we're coming in his line. And so there's different groups that serve Krishna. And I think that there's no harm in desiring to be part of that group and desiring to be with Vaishnavas together. But, of course, the difficulty is that our relationships have to be spiritual, not on the material body. It's not like that we believe that we're all going to go back to heaven and then everyone's going to be there just as they are here. You know, but whether we'll be able to recognize this person as the person I associated with before, yes, I think that we can do that. Yes? You want to get the mic over there to him?
I've been thinking about the question which Pratik had asked about why is it necessary for us to forget all the past lives, because it eliminates the possibility of learning through those miseries. And because it eliminates the possibility of learning through those miseries of the past lives. And I had come across two explanations, and I wanted to just verify whether they are like correct way to understand it or not. And thank you for the explanation which you gave, which made a lot of sense to me. One is through in Bhagavad Gita there is this shloka about the chain of events which starts from attachment to the material objects, which leads to frustration and then loss of memory. So if we are attached with these sense objects, then we lose our memory, and as a result of which we do not remember not even our past lives but also about this life itself. So if we are more spiritually inclined, and if we are doing activities which are spiritual in nature, then our memory will be enhanced, and therefore there are like we can remember the past life as well. This was one thing which I thought of, and second was we read about the Bhagavatam shlokas in the morning, where it says Bhagavati Uttama Shloke Bhakti Bhavati Naishtiki, which says that it is almost all the impurities in the heart are almost completely destroyed when you are reading the Srimad Bhagavatam. So why is it almost completely destroyed? It is almost because there is some remnant of memory left in that, which was explained in one of the Bhagavatam classes, that because we have some memory of what we have done before reading Srimad Bhagavatam, that memory is itself there, therefore all the impurities are destroyed, but it's almost there. So if we have remembrance of all the past lives of everything that we have done, then that is like a collective remnant of a lot of impurities in our heart. So it is better to forget all those things.
Well, it's interesting. There are a lot of different things, and thank you for those points. I think that they're helpful for understanding this question that Pratik raised. What he said, I don't know if I can repeat what he said. But I can add something here for those that did hear what he said. There's a story that Narada Muni and Magari the hunter. And in that story, Magari, you know the story, he used to half kill animals. And he couldn't understand the sinful nature of it. But then Narada Muni gave him vision to see what his future would be based on committing those sinful activities and how horrible it would be. And that was enough for him to give up performing those practices. So knowledge and being covered by ignorance are helpful to the living entity, or maybe they're helpful to the living entity always. Sometimes they're used to give us impetus to take to spiritual life. Sometimes they're used to shield us from the horrible life, the existence we would have if we could understand. If we could understand all the sinful activities that we're committing and the reactions to them, everyone can't eat. You have to say the prayer. I'm giving you misery then. So please chant the prayer. Sarira vichaja jyotsinvita Nubhivati avamo sudhunti Adhapati samsari Sudhavadamai kalabhai jivaja Isarami devabhai Isarami kipurahai Kishkanam 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 Just one last point about this question that's coming up. If we had knowledge of all the sinful activities we're committing and their reactions, we would be paralyzed and we could not do, we'd be afraid to do anything. We'd be catatonic. You know, there are so many sinful activities that reactions that we're subjecting to ourselves to at every moment that it's mercy to not know those things. However, when it's necessary for our spiritual advancement, then Krishna can make those things known to us and we can advance accordingly based on ceasing such sinful activities. So it's the Lord's illusory energy can be used to help us and it can be used to shield us from great suffering as the Lord desires. So we'll end on that note.